Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan, Blake Murphy, J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. No audio clip playing in. If you watched the Leaf game last night, you don't need to relive it, I don't think. The Toronto Maple Leafs lose 5-3 to the Tampa Bay Lightning. That first-round playoff series locked up at one. Pretty fun, pretty exciting game, if a little frustrating. We talk sometimes in this space about score effects and things like that. Not in this series. Throw it out. J.D. Bunkus, neither of these teams. I know you're a big, big in-game better. You got whoever scores the first goal, just ride. Neither of these teams can play from behind.
You know, I just wanted this to be the Leafs go out and win both games. How sweet that would have been. How nice that would have been. And I really thought in the first period that's what we were going to be in for. The Leafs start off and they just look like the better team early. Tampa's giving you their best punch. The physicality is obviously there. Toronto looks to be responding well. Toronto looks like the team that left the third period of game one. And Tampa kept chugging along. Tampa scored first. You're right. And to me, this is there are a few big stories from that game. But so far, number one is neither team has quite looked themselves when trailing in the series. Toronto, when the game was tied, they looked awesome. If you want to throw in the Leafs push late, you can, I guess. But to me, that was you're really out of this game. And you were still lost by two, right? Like, it wasn't like they closed it to one and really got some crazy push. It reminded people, I think, of that Columbus game where people went, oh my God, could this possibly happen? Could they really do this? It wasn't quite that. But neither team has looked the exact same when trailing. And there's a couple of things to that. I thought that we said Tampa needs to respond. This is a Tampa response game. What happens if Tampa comes out and they're not able to establish their game after talking about it for basically 48 hours? Well, they did it, but what was interesting was Toronto looked good matching it early, right? When the score was the same. When it tilted, and there was that brief moment, but then Simmons takes the power or the penalty, like after it goes 2-1.
Which one?
Yeah, the first. There was a brief moment where Toronto looked like they were giving a pushback, but for the most part, when Tampa was up, Tampa looked like Tampa. They got their power play going. They got their legs going. Their team was more physical. They were a little bit more intelligent. They got Vasilevsky playing great. Hedman makes two incredible plays. Braden Point looks like the playoff goat once again, where he's just every single shift you're going, oh my God, why is this guy out here again? Kucherov started slow, and then he even settled into the game where he started making plays and getting the classic Kucherov zone entries. I had to resist tweeting front runner Kucherov is back like 1,000 times in that game. But this series has been all about responses. How will the Maple Leafs respond to the playoff chokes of the past? Well, Marner comes out in game one, and he's brilliant, and the Leafs win in dominant fashion. How will the Lightning respond in game two? Well, they responded beautifully, and Toronto really didn't have a perfect counterpunch when they fell down early in that game. So now the question becomes, will there be anything that carries over into game three? Because I wouldn't say that's the case after we've talked about how momentum's not game to game in a series. But Toronto now has to once again be the team that responds in game three. And they're going to have to find their game. And they're going to have to impose it again early in Tampa.
Yeah, the momentum carryover thing was something I certainly was interested in seeing last night. I would say the Leafs' first period, they seem to have a little bit of maybe what they had in game one. Whether that
they
has
were
to
awesome
do with-
when they started.
Yeah, whether that had to do with the carryover from the momentum of spanking that team or being on home ice or, you know, having Bunting back in the lineup. There's definitely things that can give a team momentum. But to get a goal scored on you with 1.4 seconds left is a very defeating feeling. You go into the locker room with a little bit of a, like, that's disappointing. And it wasn't the best goal scored on Jack Campbell, for sure. I don't really know what that type of defending the net was kind of doing there, but
well, Muzzin blows a play. He's trying to make it clear, and the puck just bounces.
It's not all on him.
Yeah,
it's not all on him. But he was alone in front and kind of did an interesting move. Regardless, the puck goes in with a second left. It's how you can bounce back from that, and then from that moment on, it just felt like things were getting out of reach for the Maple Leafs. That's a mental toughness thing. And not saying that they weren't mentally tough, but I'm saying that you need to be able to dig deep. And that comes a lot from not just your top players, but the depth of the team being able to find a way to get that secondary scoring, get back in the game, and to control that. Well, this physicality of the series is the way it is definitely a tough thing to manage. You know, you're trying to get back in the game, but you're getting penalties called against you. Your players aren't getting the most amount of ice time that you'd like because you're on the PK. And you didn't have your power kill really going until the very last penalty kill of the game where you get a shorthanded goal. So I think the momentum shift certainly happened during that first intermission, and the Leafs playing behind for the first time in this series, they didn't seem to have that extra edge that you would hope for in a playoff series.
This sounds like a bit of an excuse, but that first goal and being such a bad bounce, that really hurt the Leafs. And John Cooper would admit this as a guy who's won Stanley Cups. The Leafs would never admit this, and you're not supposed to basically absolve anyone of responsibility for it, and of course you're not, but I didn't think Tampa looked all that good in the first. I thought Toronto was the better of the two teams. Mm-hmm. And Tampa's power play is looking meh again. And then all of a sudden a puck just bounces right onto the tape of one of the greatest defensemen who ever lived right in front of the net with the goaltender in a disadvantageous position. And Hedman gets to bang it in. And 1.4 seconds is one of those... Mm-hmm. Boy, you got to feel
the wind
like,
out of your sails.
I was just going to say, like, how does that make you feel as a player? Probably the same as a fan, where you're looking at it and going, I can't believe that just happened. And if you're Tampa Bay, you're going, well, that's the bounce we needed. That's mm-hmm. all we needed to get going. And I thought from that point forward, Tampa settled in. And that Tampa's power play looked way better. Tampa's stars look way better. All of a sudden, Hedman is just snapping the plays of the game. Like, the pass mm-hmm. that he had to Corey Perry is why that guy is Victor Hedman, right? Everyone seemed to settle in on Tampa Bay's side once they got that bounce. And that, I hate it.
I mean, I think even Stewie said it the other day, but it's something that I've heard as a player my whole life, is you can't win or lose. You have to win or lose the last and first minute of every period. And I know it's a little cliche thing, but it truly does make a difference in terms of the momentum. You don't want to go back into that locker room. It's all sports. And for that to happen, it is defeating. It's a wind out of the sails moment. And you're right. It shifted the complete mentality of Tampa. They needed a bounce, and sometimes that's how a playoff series goes, where you get something fortunate that goes your way, you get a break, a puck goes in the net, and you're a completely different perspective on how the rest of this game goes. And they definitely had that.
So JD, you said that's all they needed to get going, and that is my concern here. I know we talk a lot about momentum in playoff series and stuff like that, and you know, statistically it's not really there, right? Like, Tampa Bay is now 15-0 over the last three playoffs after they lose a game. Like, if momentum exists, Tampa Bay knows how to kill it. And so I'm not saying this will necessarily carry over, but I really do think you let... And Kucherov is the guy who really stands out to me, because I thought through the first four periods of this series, he was invisible to bad. He's probably the best case of it, but I thought Braden Point had an excellent game too, and you gave that fourth line a little bit of life for Tampa Bay as well, where, hey, if you were going to get a little bit of an edge with their top guys sleeping or being fatigued or anything like that, that was a game for them to get back into it. And everyone feels a little better after they get on the score sheet. Mm-hmm. So I think that goal at the end of the first with 1.4 seconds left is a good snapshot of the entire game, because Toronto outplayed them that period, and Tampa got one because they're Tampa and fortune favors them, maybe. And you look at the series, and I would say the Leafs have probably won five of the six periods. I thought they outplayed them in the third last night. But it's 1-1, and if you're Tampa Bay, you're pretty empowered by that, I think, and you got to hope, if you're the Leafs, that A, momentum isn't a real thing, as we often see is the case, and B, that you didn't just let Kucherov back into this series.
I don't think that series momentum happens yet. I think that it happens when a team is blowing a series, like we saw with the 76ers and the Raptors, mm-hmm. where there was real series momentum there. There was series momentum last year, everybody knows it, when the Leafs blew it to the Habs. Yep. They lost in the Galchenyuk game, and the series momentum shifted drastically. They got in their own heads, and they started to play tight, and they could never find their game after that. I don't anticipate that to happen with the Leafs. I'm not looking at that one as, oh, man, the Leafs really screwed that one up. I just think you can't give games to a team like Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay stole one from the Leafs last night. And that's the unfortunate nature of that game. I think about, you know what I just thought about when you guys were talking about the closing quarters? Because that's universal in sports, right? There's nothing more deflating than when a team scores on you at the end of the game. But it reminded me a little bit of the Chiefs, where they're playing the Bengals last year, and they go for the touchdown at the end of the game, and they don't, or that they, at halftime, and they don't score. And they leave that one on the table, and it really shifted the rest of the game. It shifted a good chunk of the next period of the game. Chiefs offense showed up at times, but it was never quite the same after that moment. That's what it is in sports. You have to close quarters. You have to close halves. You have to close periods, whatever. And that bounce really put Tampa in a good spot. I thought the momentum in the game was real. I'm not concerned about the next one, but here's the thing. The next one, Toronto absolutely is the team that has more questions on their shoulders again, right? This whole game was, how will Tampa respond? How will Tampa respond? John Cooper is dismissive. John Cooper says the Leafs didn't have to make it very tough on them, they didn't make it very tough on the Leafs. That's now going to be, well, what do the Leafs do on the road in Tampa Bay? They're going to have to go and steal one now. Toronto is going to have to go win of one of those two games. And boy, it's going to start to feel a little weighty if you go down 2-1 in Tampa and all of a sudden you've got to win that game 4, right? So how do you respond? That's going to continue to be the name of the game this series. I will say this. There was never really a moment where I thought the first line looked bad. Like, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, Michael Bunting all looked phenomenal. The Matthews back check and then forecheck to create the turnover, those guys all look good. The question is going to be with the other guys now, because they were trailing and they could have got back in that hockey game, but part of getting back in a game is you need secondary scoring, and that's been now, that becomes the storyline for the Toronto Maple Leafs, is William Nylander and John Tavares. You two need to score. You two cannot just be, there's no more praising John Tavares for winning faceoffs, which is what was going on early in the game, right? And I went, that's actually true. 80% is really good. And he's setting up plays and people aren't giving him enough credit for that. No, you got to put the puck in the net. You got to set up a goal. William Nylander, he's done the same thing 2 straight games now, which is show up and look awesome through the first few shifts of the game and then disappear for large portions of it. That includes some pretty boneheaded decisions. Like, he's on the ice for one of those goals that wasn't very good either late. So those two guys, to me, are the circle question mark guys that you're going to hear a lot of, I would say, today, tomorrow, leading up to these games of, are they going to find themselves in the series? Are they going to inject themselves in the series?
That was the biggest takeaway for me last night. Regardless of the momentum, you need to have more than Matthews and Marner and Bunting, who stepped in pretty well, to do what they needed to do last night.
They can win you a game, not a series.
They can win you a game, not a series, exactly. And Tampa's big players won them a game last night, but they're going to need more than just that. When you look at the Maple Leafs, Tavares, I know he makes a lot of money. It's not even, don't even think about the contract. You just need your second line center to be producing. Like, you need him to do more than, as you said, take faceoffs. And I know that a lot of argument could be put on the fact that he doesn't penalty kill, and there's a lot of penalties being called in this series. You're a veteran. You've played in this league for how many years? You know, you're a leader. You're the captain of this team. You need to find a way to get back in the game. You can't be sluggish and sitting on the bench and letting that affect you. Like, if anyone knows how to stay dialed into a game and be able to jump on the ice when it's your turn after the penalty kill ends, it should be you. He looks just not unengaged, but I just, like, don't notice him out there. So that should be a problem. I wanted to be able to notice... Yeah, I want to be able to notice the captain of the team out there, whether it's after a penalty kill or not, and he's just seemingly invisible. I think the Nylander-Tavares partnership needs to come back together. I think that that is something that might spring these guys into action in Game 3. Nylander had really nobody, I mean, no offense to like an Engvall, but nobody really to help him on rushes. I think that they need to be reunited at least at this point. You're going to go into a series 1-1. There needs to be an opportunity for those guys to get back in the game. They've played together, but Tavares is the biggest circle for me as what's going on. How do we get this guy going? And we've had that conversation a lot this year, which is the problem. It's not something new. It's been like, let's get a winger for Tavares. Let's get Tavares going. And now we're in the postseason and we're kind of having that conversation again, which is frustrating.
The Nylander element of it is tough to figure too, because Nylander should have one skill that doesn't slump, right? Your ability to skate at the level that William Nylander can skate shouldn't have nights off or shifts off. There has been a little bit of maybe the guys he's playing with can't keep up with him in the offensive zone. Pierre Engvall had a rough night last night with, in terms of receiving passes, just coughing stuff up. I think it's a bad sign, though, when you mentioned Nylander and Tavares being reunited, and my head goes to, well, yeah, then you'd only have one underperforming line instead of two, because it might fix the third line as well.
Yeah, I think, Ailish, though, what you said there about Tavares is that's the key, is the Leafs built their team on the idea of having two first lines. And that's never really felt that way all year, but you thought maybe Tavares would look a little bit more like that going into playoffs. And for Tampa, how do their stars respond, right? How do their stars respond? How do they look coming into this game? It took a while for Kucherov to settle into that game, but eventually his line showed up. I think Stamkos has been a little bit invisible in this series. Like, he hasn't exactly been the guy who had the career year. I haven't noticed him very much. Leafs have done a good job of getting him out of the power play mix here, and I thought Kucherov was kind of forcing it to him at times, and part of the reason that maybe he wasn't himself is that he's always looking for Stamkos. But eventually he settled in and he was there, and you go, oh, right, that's the two lines, the point line and the Kucherov line. Those, they're going to go. Tavares has yet to do that. You know how many scoring chances he had yesterday? Zero. He had the one on five-on-five, sorry. He had one high-danger chance, one shot. William Nylander, two shots, same thing. Zero high danger chances for him. That's 11 minutes of 5-on-5 time. You look at across the board for those two guys, three shots in a combined 20 minutes of 5-on-5 time? That's just simply not good enough from those two guys.
You played even with the fourth line in terms of offensive chances, and you know, I know in single games we throw expected goals out the window or whatever, but you played even with the fourth line.
Yeah.
So that's just not going to cut it.
They're going to have to do more. And Tavares is going to have to find a way to impose himself more. And so is William Nylander going to have to find a way to be more consistent. Because there, at least with Nylander, there are times where he flashes. But again, he's a flashier looking player in terms of his zone entries, the way that he carries the puck in. It's not the same for Tavares. So it's a little bit tougher for him in that he's not going to be as noticeable with the puck as Nylander is. But Nylander, again, like, just some tough moments in that game, whether it was defensively, whether it was the fact that he's snapping the puck, missing the net when they're setting up on their 6-on-4 on the power play that clears the zone and basically ends the game. Exactly. There were some really tough moments for those guys and not very good moments. So three shots between those two guys, three shots between $18 million of player. They're going to need more because this has been it from the past. Last year, Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews slowed down. Nylander, Kerfoot carried the load. They looked great. There was secondary scoring, but they needed more because it was from their top line. This year, for long stretches, the Leafs season, it was the top line looks amazing, but where's the secondary scoring coming from? They've had moments of it, but never really consistency from it. Those guys have to be more consistent. Okay, the other story of the game, obviously, the physicality, the whistle, and Wayne Simmonds becoming the center of those three things. Wayne Simmonds takes two backbreaking penalties that both go in the Leafs' net. And if you think the late one wasn't as bad, I would say that, yes, it absolutely was. You saw the Leafs' offense, how quickly they can get back into a game. And how different is that contest if the Leafs are only down one goal with that power play? Maybe Nylander doesn't take that shot. Maybe it's not as desperate with that unit. Who knows how it goes? So he takes the two. What did you guys just kind of make of the whistle, the physicality, and then we'll get to Simmonds?
The series is going to be the way it is, it seems. I don't feel like that's going to change. The officiating seems to have set their standard, whether you like it or not. Yeah, whether you like it or not, there's really nothing you can do about it. And it can be an easy crutch to complain about, and I know that Leafs fans are sometimes guilty of that. But when you look at it, there was definitely penalties that shouldn't have happened. When you're a fourth-line player, which I know too well, your role is to be energy, momentum shifter. You're not out there to be a detriment to your team. Even Simmonds post-game took that weight and said, I took too many penalties. I took two penalties. They scored two goals. Well, that's easy math that you shouldn't be doing that. Clifford also, fourth liner, game one, takes first shift out there, has a play that could have. Obviously, luckily, the Leafs took it a different way, but puts his team behind. fourth line guys need to know, like, there's a line between physicality and being that guys that push people around, help your team get momentum, and it being this type of situation where you're costing your team. I think the whistle is going to be the whistle. So you need to find a way to play through it. Like, you need to find a way to not let it affect you. And it's game two, and it's been the story of two games so far.
This was a little bit of my issue with the lineup in the first game, and we talked about it on Monday before the game of, hey, Clifford and Simmons on that fourth line at the expense of Espeza, and what do you do when Bunting comes back, and who's the odd man out? And I get wanting to set a tone early in the series. I get wanting to have physical guys available if you need them. However, the big difference between this team's fourth line and Tampa Bay's agitator fourth line is Tampa Bay's fourth line is also good. They can score. They can put pressure on a defense. They can forecheck well. Simmons, that fourth line last night was very, very bad possession-wise, despite pretty favorable deployment. And then obviously there are the bad penalties. I think Blackwell and Kasha are okay. But if I'm looking at this series as Sheldon Keefe right now, I'm saying, look, I've shoehorned tough guys in there, and it's cost us 9 minutes of penalties and two goals, and it's merciful that it was only two goals because of that five-minute Clifford penalty. Those guys are not bringing enough other things, and your top players who you're ostensibly trying to protect in Clifford and Simmons have answered the call in terms of toughness. Marner has played tough. Mm-hmm. Matthews has played tough. Tavares and Nylander maybe less so, but your guys haven't shown that they need that fourth line to pick up the toughness level. So I would be shifting hard to, we can't give away 6-7 minutes with that fourth line and risk penalties in game three.
Ailish, I really love what you said about finding that balance between physicality and being a little overly charged up. I think Simmons is too charged up. I really do. I think that when he's going out there right now, he's looking for bodies, and he's looking to, he knows the only way that he can insert himself into the hockey game is by doing something like that. And that was very apparent last night. I think, Blake, to your point, Clifford did the same thing when he was in. That Sheldon Keefe goes, we're expecting a violent series, and we put this line together, and these guys, we're not going to be pushed around, and it's going to be blah, 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 blah. And then guess what? One guy goes out all charged up and nails somebody from behind, takes a five-minute major and suspension. And then last night, Simmons is flying around out there nonstop, doing dumb things. I thought the first penalty was absolutely soft, obviously. Like, playoff hockey, you don't normally expect that. Of course, there's going to be Leaf fans that screenshot plays around the net yesterday that all look worse or just like the Simmons play. But still, both are dumb, and both, like, Simmons did it right in front of official, and he comes up, he's late, the first hit, soft, but obviously something that you can call. And when you're Wayne Simmons and you're on the ice and you're doing that every single shift and you look like you're playing a little bit out of control, frankly, then obviously the official is going to be looking at you and looking to make that call. But Lyubushkin, Ailish, he's the guy that I looked at when they're saying, hey, physical and playing within the line. Lyubushkin's been physical all series long. Looks like a playoff stud. Clear in the front of the net. Grabbing Pat Maroon. Shoving him into the glass to clear the net after the whistle. Where's the dumb Lyubushkin penalties? Haven't been there. Weren't there like Wayne Simmons was? Simmons and Clifford, they got to make a decision as to whether Keefe wants to have that element of these two guys are flying around and we're just going to have that be there for 5 minutes a night and potentially put us in the box and break our backs against that Tampa team, or whether they're going to try to make some kind of an adjustment here and say, you know what, maybe we need to lean on our players and ask them to not feel like the toughness is coming down the lineup, that they need to see that they can match the physicality of Tampa in that way for those meaningless 5 minutes, like Blake just said.
You play into what Tampa Bay wants, too. Like, you know that they love when you get under, they're getting under your skin. Like, Pat Maroon, first shift, the first period of that game, he was looking to start something.
He loves
it. He loves it. And he, as you said, he's also good. So he can, you know, he can do it. He can be a playoff performer. We've seen that in the past where he can be a goal scorer when you don't expect it. But Tampa Bay was instigating in a way that you could just tell was getting under that fourth line skin. And then you're more focused in delivering a message,
exactly,
and getting in someone's face and I'm going to even this up and we need this physicality of the series. And you're not worried about, oh, let's play defensively. Let's shut this down. Let's give some actual positive possession numbers on the ice. And it is super distracting. And if that's what Tampa Bay's game plan is, which I really do think part of it is, they've certainly executed it quite well.
Yeah, and Ailish, your point about kind of chasing that, oh, well, you've got to answer the physicality. It's almost like this tilting scale thing where you think it's on balance and then Tampa does something physical, so then you have to do mm-hmm. something physical to balance it back out. But you don't have the same understanding and the same, I guess we'll call it technique in terms of towing that line. I thought Lyubushkin, JD, is a great point because he's mm-hmm. been the one guy who, like, if you want an example of where the line of physicality is in a playoff series with mm-hmm. this set of with this type of officiating, he's been it, right? Like, and his hooking penalty last night was the only penalty I thought was really egregiously a bad call. Like, yeah. if that's a hook, then there's a hook on every play in the NHL.
But he's not taking dumb penalties, right? Like, I know. That's one where you go,
I know.
Okay,
and
well,
I think
that's...
he deserves the benefit of the doubt after yeah. two games because he is the guy I look at. Muzzin's actually done a really good job of this, too. And
Muzzin
I,
as well.
I just want to mm-hmm. say it because we were a little questionable about Muzzin heading in the series, but Muzzin and Lyubushkin have shown the rest of these guys where that line is in terms of physicality. And I think they've done it enough in concert with the first line showing some real toughness too, that yeah, you don't need to do this. And like you said, Ailish, it plays into Tampa Bay's hand because Tampa Bay has the rare ability to have an agitation line that can also score and defend. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that. You can't match that with Simmons or Clifford or both on the ice.
So I'm sure that someone who has played or someone in that room, if they were going to make the counter argument, it would be, well, the reason why the Leafs are able to respond to some of this physicality is that they know that Simmons is out there and that Clifford might be out there and that those guys are going to hold people accountable, or they're going to clear the front of a net, or they're going to be able to, when a game gets out of hand, be on the ice. Is that not, just like, no, those two guys have been a disaster in the series. And I really do think that This is one of the spots where if we're looking at, hey, I already, you know, you could do headlines from the future. If the Leafs lose this series, I think it's kind of getting to the point where maybe they should have won. They're the more talented team. They just look like the more talented team through two games on balance. Like I said, it's still Tampa played great in that game. They got their power play going. Hedman got going. Point got going. Kucherov got going, right? Vasilevsky was awesome. They played an up-and-down game where a lot of different guys contributed, and yet it still felt like Toronto, they stole one. Like, that's a real indicator for Toronto. It still felt like they stole one. But if Toronto loses a series, Sheldon Keefe's going to get criticized for that fourth line decision, because that was okay. He got away with it in game one because they get out of that Clifford penalty unscathed, and it becomes the power kill. They didn't get that in the game two. And you know what turns out to be on balance? If you give power plays to a team with Hedman, Point, Kucherov, Stamkos, it probably is not going to be good. Probably right after you score a goal and you feel the building start to tilt and the momentum start to shift, that you don't want to give the other team a power play. So that it's going to be a criticism. And I think that the Leafs have responded as a team extremely well to the physical play. Mm-hmm. And what's been annoying is the guys who seem like they haven't have been the guys charged with being the physical presence players.
So you mentioned, JD, that one of the potential reasons for that is, oh, well, if a game gets out of hand, it's like, okay, well, that happened.
Who cares?
In game one.
Yeah, I know.
Morgan Rielly had question marks about whether his hand was okay because he had to step up and fight. Mm-hmm. And you know what Tampa Bay loves more than they hate, oh, a tough fourth line that can body check? They love power plays.
Yeah.
Scored a bunch of goals on it last night. Scored a bunch of goals on it the last time they played the Leafs in the regular season, when it was the same kind of thing and the physicality got ratcheted up and Toronto lost the handle on that more than Tampa Bay did. This is, Ailish said it earlier, it plays yeah. into what Tampa wants to do.
They love it.
And it plays into what Tampa's advantage is, not only as the two-time defending champs, but as a team that goes four lines deep, is everyone is always, there's like this constant threat being carried by Tampa Bay, and they make you uncomfortable because they're very good and very experienced and very deep. This plays into that. And you don't yeah. want to, I mean, it was a minor concern when Keefe had those comments pre-series and they rolled Clifford and Simmons out there. I think you gotta play your own way and not play into that element of Tampa's game.
Well, this is why I think it's going to be really, really interesting what the fourth line looks like heading into this next game, because you're going to have Clifford available again. And
there's no way Spets is not in that game.
Spets, well, Blackwell, Kasha is what I'm thinking.
Well, here's the thing, though. If you're Keefe, Are you worried about feeling like you overreacted? Because this is the plan that you had going in, was this heavy line. I just think that he's put himself in a tough spot. Yes, all of us today are going to have that position of put that group in, mm-hmm. put that line in.
But that's been my position the whole time, though.
Totally. But Toronto going in on the road and having Wayne Simmonds have to sit a game after he took two back-breaking penalties, and all of a sudden, it just, again, you're not in a really good spot here. But I think that the thing you said earlier, Ailish, about that fourth line with Maroon and Perry, where they're out there and it kind of feels like those two lines are going head-to-head, except for they're not, because one is having an offensive impact and mm-hmm. the other is not. The other is scary, the other is not. I don't think that any of those guys are being thrown off their games by Wayne Simmonds doing things in front of the net, right? Like, Corey Perry's going to be... Have you guys watched any of Corey Perry's career? This is how he thrives. Is some guy tries to hit him in a dirty way in front of a net, and he goes, thank you, we will take the power play. Thank you, I'm going to go to the Hall of Fame because of Bozo plays like this, because people can't control themselves around me. You think Patrick Maroon, with his two Stanley Cup rings, like back-to-back years, three years in a row, where Blake took a lot out of me for that tweet, but I'd leave it alone, where you're like, the Patrick Maroon story. I was like, the Patrick Maroon story is three straight Stanley Cup rings, sir. And the reason why is because mm-hmm. what are you supposed to do with that guy in front of the net? When he's there, he's a monster. And when guys grab him and try to engage in physical play, he goes, ha, ha, ha. Did you see Labushkin grab him early in the game? Labushkin pushes him up against the glass, and he's strong, but he gets thrown in a headlock right away, and it looks like he's his little brother, right? Like, that's what a big brother looks like when he's wrestling a little brother, and he says, okay, I'm not going to hurt you because I love you, but don't mess around any more than you're messing around. So I just see those guys are chasing the game, and those guys are trying to find a way to do something, and only thing that they can do is do dumb things, physical things. And in this series, where the officials are going to call it this way, it's not the way I like it. I don't know if you can sustain this. I don't know if you can keep this. And I don't know what the purpose is anymore. I don't know what the purpose of having Wayne Simmonds is on a team where you can't afford to keep doing this. You need secondary scoring, and you're just getting dumb penalties given up. Like you said it, Blake, 9 minutes in two games of dumb power plays between Clifford and Simmonds is 9 minutes way too many.
You need your fourth line to be like that game one. That was it. Set the tone game one. They did that. Whether it was successful or not, they got their fights out. You got their fights out. They line brawl in game one. You know, yeah. They had the big hit, the line brawl. Okay, we're not going to play like that every single game. You know, whether the whistles continue this way or not, I think you need a fourth line that's contributing and that has a different identity than just rock 'em, sock 'em hockey, where we're just going to punch people and get penalties and take away the momentum from the team. That was more of a game one thing for me, and now we're about to enter game three. You have to adjust, and that's something we talked about with Sheldon Keefe. Is he able to out-coach? Is he able to make adjustments in the playoffs? That will be interesting moving forward to Tampa if he changes that second lineup and if he is able to change up that fourth line identity. So lots of intrigue going into tomorrow's game.
So lastly, before we take the break, try to do this one quickly, and we'll touch on this more with our guests later. So it's all about responses, right? That seems to be the theme of our first block here, is who responds to what and how did people respond to leads and to physical play, whatever. How did you guys find Jack Campbell responded to a game where he needed to make saves?
Thought it was a tough situation that he got put in, because so many of those opportunities came on the power play, right? And you can't expect a goalie to stop everything. Six saves on nine power play shots isn't great, but he did a pretty good job at even strength, like over 900 at even strength. He had that one stretch where he basically saved them from allowing a shorthanded goal on that one power play where mm-hmm. Tampa was in their end the whole time. I thought it was okay. I didn't think there was anything egregious other than, you know, he didn't play that Hedman bounce particularly well. It was a little bit of a weird one. I thought he was just okay, though. And yeah, they needed more than just okay from him last night, unfortunately.
Yeah, we needed just a little bit more, I think, than him. That would have gave us... We did talk about it after game one of how, hey, he got a shutout, but he wasn't tested. You know, the Leafs dominated that game. So what were you going to get out of game two? And it wasn't as impressive as I hoped. He did get way more pressure. He got way more shots. They were very physical in front of the net. Like, there are a couple times where the guys were up in his grill and pushing, and that's what we said that Tampa would have to do. And they did that, and he was outperformed from the goaltender down the ice, which is an obvious thing because Vasilevsky is one of the best goaltenders ever. But you got to be able to elevate just a bit more. I think there's maybe two or three goals that you would want back if you're Jack Campbell, or that you wish you had better positioning on, or you wish you made a bigger save in the moment. We can't put it just on him, but I definitely think that if we're going to move forward in a series that might go seven games, he's going to have to steal a game. He didn't steal game one because he wasn't tested enough. Last night, he wasn't the main deterrent of why the Leafs lost, but Vasilevsky had some incredible saves that helped keep the momentum that Tampa had. If you have one big save, if he was able to hold that 0-0 tie going into the second period, things could be different. So it's hard to evaluate his bounce back because it wasn't as tested as we thought in game one. But I wanted just a little bit more from Jack.
I agree.
But I think he's the type of guy that can leave a game in the past and find a way to make game three even better. So
it was a tough game to evaluate. It was a tough game to evaluate because he was good at times. He wasn't great. The Leafs didn't really put themselves in a position to win very many times, but all the goals are ones where you go, how am I supposed to really rip on him? Like, there's no bad goal, right? There's no backbreaker, which is what we've seen in the past. Some of the Freddie Anderson goals in the past were backbreakers, right? Where you go, oh, my God, Freddie. Like, oh, my God, man, how could you? He never had one of those, but he didn't have, like, a, wow, Jack, that was a huge save until the game was already, well, you're down three goals. You know, and that was the thing for me. I don't know if I agree with he needs to steal a game because they're playing Vasilevsky and the idea that he's going to outplay him. Maybe if he gets you one, that would be awesome, right? He made the All-Star team. Like, maybe why not? He showed it in the past. Why not? Maybe I'm holding the bar for him a little bit too low and yours is the correct one. But yeah, I just thought yesterday was you had to come up with one moment. And your moment was the Kucherov breakaway. But that was already when I think the score was 4-1. Like,
yeah, it's a little late for the momentum shift at that
point. You had to have one of those three. And they were all, okay, well, they would have been tough plays to make. Hedman in front of the net, Corey Perry in a breakaway, blah, 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 power play goal. Yeah, okay. Just make one of them, though. You know, like, you are supposed to be there to make big saves. You need to make one of those big saves. So I would say
because the other guy's making them.
Exactly. Vasilevsky makes that one big glove save, and you go, well, right. That's why you're you, and
exactly.
That's why Jack Campbell is Jack Campbell. And you, the discrepancy between the goaltenders, I just think it has to be brought up because people are always going to say, well, the Leafs have never had a series where the goaltender outplayed the other goaltender, and so far through two games, that's remaining to be the case despite one guy having a shutout. Let's take a break. Let's do the A-list. A very special day for a very special someone on the A-list. J.D., Blake, and Ailish, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Breaking down the top stories in hockey and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Cinco de Mayo today. It's Baby Friday today. And
what
it's also a very, very special day in the universe, as it is somebody's birthday who's very special to us. Happy birthday, Mitch Marner!
Mitch Marner, honestly, like, what a day.
We
what
love
a day.
Mitchie
Baby Friday.
Mitch.
We love Mitch Marner. I'm just getting flat. We love that song.
That thing with his grandma last night was really sweet.
Was very sweet.
Reminded
me of my little
old lady
grandma. We also have another special birthday.
Yeah, PJ Tucker, too.
We have another special birthday as well. Our friend Laura Stacey.
Yay.
We also have another special birthday.
PJ Tucker.
Adele. But the most important of all is it is our very own Blake Murphy's birthday today.
Happy
birthday. Not to be forgotten. Happy birthday, Blake.
Woo! Happy Blake Day, Blakey Blake.
Happy Blake.
Blake Day to you. you don't like the song that we prepared for you, Blake? Wow. That was rude.
That's good enough. Happy birthday, thanks, Blake.
Happy birthday. Thanks. Happy Blake Day.
Did you think we forgot? Did you think we forgot?
I don't know. It's not.
Look at. Listen to me. He's like
all that important today.
He's like, I don't know. I thought maybe. See, he heard the song. He got all excited. It went to Mitch Marner. Did you guys have that in your towns growing up? Like, I remember that. Hey, it's your birthday song. That's a pure radio song. I think. Are we allowed to play the happy birthday song? I feel like maybe it's out. Maybe it's some weird copyright thing. Like. I don't know.
It's got to be in public domain at this point, right?
I don't know. I feel like that's a weird one because
it's like, is the alphabet copyrighted? That's a song.
I don't think so.
Happy birthday to you is in the public domain in the U.S. and the European Union.
Perfect. We can put it in the podcast then, no?
So, that song, that's a different song. That's the Hey, It's Your Birthday song.
No, I meant the happy birthday one we can do.
But the Hey, It's Your Birthday song, the reason why I assumed it wasn't in public domain is when I was growing up, I remember listening to the radio on the way to work. Or way to work, on way to school. My parents, I was
hitting the coal mines at 10.
I know, I was going to say, I'm old. I'm not Industrial Revolution old. I wasn't sticking my wee little hands in to make sure that the machines kept operating properly. That song was, oh man, it's the shout out show. Whose birthday is it today? I'm from a small town. Like, that was very much a thing for me, was listening to the Hey, It's Your Birthday segment on the radio. It was always fun. People calling in, telling a radio host who there was their friend's birthday. Yeah.
She's in my grade 8 class.
Electric stuff, you know? We think this is all this hard thing to do. All three of us are prepping all night, making sure our notes are all straight. I have my buddy staying with me in town, and he's going, man, you work a lot. You do a lot of note-taking throughout stuff. I go, yeah, it's a lot. All we need to do is play the Hey, It's Your Birthday song, let people call in and say it's their birthdays, and we'll be a smash hit show, I'm telling you. This is the whole key to what we do. We're really overthinking it here. We're trying to reinvent the wheel. Just take calls from people wanting to wish friends happy birthday. Look at the Jumbotron. People put people's name up on the Jumbotron. They're like 38 years old, and they go, thank you for doing that for me. That's so nice. You put my name on the Jumbotron. Yay. They put it on their Instagram stories. People still care. Birthday shout-outs are just they're eternal.
So send in your birthday shout-outs to Blake today. You can text us in 590-590. You can DM him. You can tweet at him. Let's celebrate your birthday. Also, Mitch Myers' birthday. Also,
yeah, we'll do birthday shout outs today, okay? You send the DMs.
Send some numbers in. Tell Blake your favorite stats for his birthday, okay?
Yeah. It's
send your favorite Hockey DB pages for Blake to read. All right, let's get into the A list.
Now it's time for the A list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
This could be a very dividing A-list, so I'm interested to hear your opinions on this. So the Braves were in the World Series last year, as we know, and pitcher Carl Edwards Jr., who is now playing AAA with Rochester, was awarded his World Series ring this week for his contributions to the team.
Okay.
Now, what were his contributions to the team, you might ask? Well, he played one-third of an inning. He had 3 earned runs and 1 out in a game in May. Mm-hmm. The next day, he was DFA'd, and that was it. But he still gets a World Series ring. Earned or not, where do you draw the line with handing out prestigious World Series rings? And for context, the NHL rules, I know it's a different sport, but they are that a player must have played at least 40 regular season games or 1 Stanley Cup Finals game to get their name engraved on the cup. Where do you guys fall in this divisive issue?
Well, to me, the name on the cup thing makes more sense because there's limited space and they got to... Mm-hmm. It's just, you're there on a collective trophy. So if you put on every player that gets minute with a team, it gets a little bit more out of hand. They already have a spacing issue. So that one actually makes a little bit more sense. I think if you played on a World Series champion in any facet, I don't care if the team buys you a ring. I would say that if I was a team owner, I would be all greedy and I would try to set it at you played, I don't know, 10 games with the team. You got to play 10 games with the team. You could pick some arbitrary number, but I think that is the line. The line is, did you play on the World Series champion or not? And yeah, I'm guessing that the guy's not going to walk around with the ring, but you still made the major leagues of baseball. You still made it onto a World Series caliber team. You still pitched
for them. One third of an inning.
Sure. Hey, one third more than any of us will ever experience. So congrats to him. Congrats on getting the ring. I got no skin off my ass.
Hey, Carl Edwards Jr., an electric five innings with the Blue Jays last year as well.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Oh, yeah, he's a suitcase.
So my take on this, I don't really care if you want to give guys rings, give guys rings. And this was a big talking point when the Raptors won the championship and people were like, well, JV should get one. And that's
Ooh,
a
do we give Blake
argument,
one?
But my suggestion
Blake
would
probably
be
was the only one that was like, does Blake get one? Yes.
I mean, I got one of the knockoff ones, but
yeah,
remember, I'm the guy.
Yeah, you know who else got one of the knockoffs? Everybody.
Everybody on the home opener.
Yeah, remember, I was going to say, 30,000. Blake's like, I went to the home opener. He got a giveaway, and he's like, I was given by the organization a fake championship ring. Wow, it's
Look,
stunted.
I got a fake championship ring and didn't touch Larry O'Brien. You guys are out here kissing the Stanley Cup before the playoffs start.
Not related.
So
I never touched Larry O'B. I used a buffer before of using it. But also, Larry O'B, you're allowed to touch. It's not the Stanley Cup, all right? Let's be honest.
Okay, back to your point, Blake.
Would be. Every league already has a playoff eligibility requirement.
Yeah.
If you're not, that's the easiest way to do it to me is, are you eligible for the playoffs? If so, you can have a ring. If you weren't, if you didn't stick around long enough to be playoff eligible, well, sorry about your luck.
It seems like a fair way to do it. Of course.
I'm trying to think of who are the guys the Jays added in 15 and 16 post deadline? Wasn't that? Who was that?
Oh, Joaquin Soria, Justin Upton.
Yeah,
because I'm trying. Yeah, Justin Upton. A couple other bullpen jabronis.
Forgot about that. Yeah, because I thought there was one name of significance where I would have thought, oh yeah, that'd be funny to make the team, be a part of the team, not be playoff eligible, be traveling with the team, get re-signed to the team, and then they have ring ceremony day the following season, and like hand them out to everybody, and then you don't get one. That's just, I don't know. That's almost worth it. Actually, that's kind of funny. Okay, that's great. What's next?
Okay, so here's a relatable story for me, at least, and probably a lot of our listeners. American Ryan McCormick was golfing at a PGA qualifier this week and had a three-shot stretch that just broke him. He lipped out on three straight putts, including a two-footer and a tap-in with the back of his putter, which is always just demoralizing. Yeah. He then tries to scoop up the ball in disgust. His ball rolls into the other player's ball.
I wish I had video of this.
Oh, there's a video. I'll send it to you. Yeah, he then throws his ball into the woods, okay?
Yeah.
Then he withdraws from the tournament, even
what
though he's already shot 14 holes of even par golf. So, do you respect the rage quit? Is this soft? And is there a single sport as frustrating and demoralizing as golf where you think you're going to go have a nice day in the sun, have a couple bevvies, and then you're tossing clubs and balls into the woods 14 holes later?
What I think is funniest about this, other than actually getting to see the video, because that's the most
I'll
relatable thing.
You.
You can be anybody and make those putts, right? Like you could be, hey, a back tap of the putter putt is literally something where you could take your 95-year-old grandmother, and she's never played golf before in her life, and you go, put this in, and she goes, yeah, well, this is what they do for money, and you go, yeah, let's put it in. So it's fine. It's the most relatable thing to miss that anybody can get it. There's no degree of difficulty. There's no added anything. It's just what is what it is. He misses it. He loses his mind. He throws the ball in the woods. He has to withdraw because golf is such a what's the word that's not gentleman, that's more what now it's gender friendly, is a it's an etiquette sport. There we go. It's the etiquette sport.
There.
So he can't continue. He just he had a meltdown. He just did a Happy Gilmore thing. You're donezo. You got to withdraw. Like that's basically the unspoken
rule
here.
He's playing
for this
so game. Well too.
Yeah, that's of course.
Part.
He's having a round at even par that almost every golfer on the planet would, you know,
dreams of
break their son's leg for. Like, you know, like they're just desperate for that. This guy is doing amazing. Blows it, loses his cool, loved every part of this, has to be eliminated because of the rage quit. All of this story is just so great. What I think about the relatability of it is that is the greatest thing, is everyone has had those moments playing that sport. And you're right. No, there's nothing like that one, because there's nothing like feeling like you're getting better at something and then being your absolute worst one hole later, right? Like, there's nothing worse than being like, oh, I've improved. And then you go, oh, my God, I've gotten worse. And you can have that experience within 10 minutes.
There's nothing quite like, I don't think there's another sport like that. Like, yeah. Where you, maybe tennis, where you have a really good shot and then you're like, what? I can't do this anymore. But there's nothing as escalated as
But
your
tennis,
rage
you're playing
in
someone
golf.
Else, right? Golf, it's just you. That's like, true. It's only yeah. on you.
No, you're just screaming at yourself the whole time.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, keep your texts coming in for Blake's birthday.
Would you break your son's leg for even par?
What would you do to shoot even par? Let us know.
Don't frame it as a yes or no. What is the golf score for which you would break your son's leg?
Yeah, that's better. Yeah,
because there are going to be some people.
He doesn't know. He doesn't know you broke it.
You break 80, there's, you break
by the way,
leg.
I love picturing some father and son driving to the car right now. Listen to this.
He looks over
son,
at his
dad's looking at him like he's a like, fake. He's just like, I could do this?
After last night, it'd be for less than par.
Let's take a break. After the break, we're going to talk to Ben Ennis, talk some Leafs, talk some Jays.
About what he'd break his kid's arms and
yeah.
legs for.
We'll ask him his opinion on what it would take to break his kid's legs. Okay, let's take a break. It's the Fan Morning Show. It's Sportsnet 590 The Fan.